Coming up on Boston Public Radio, not to dwell on the obvious, but it is hot, record kind of hot. We'll ask how you're coping, and we'll have a suggestion or two beyond Marjorie's legendary wet sheet solution. Then Callie Crossley talks Trayvon 6 days after. And with Emmy nominations out, are we witnessing the end of drama on network TV?
Then Emily joins us to talk about the Tsarnaev photos, first on the cover of Rolling Stone and now in Boston Magazine, plus the suspicious death of a South Boston man who'd been expected to testify in the Whitey Bulger trial. Adam Riley gives us the latest from that trial, and so fit for a scorcher of a day, our news quiz brings together, perhaps for the first time, two very fishy, very slippery guests. One runs Legal Seafoods, the other the New England Aquarium. All that coming up on Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. He's Jim Browdy. I am Marjorie Egan. You are listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH.
Hello there, Marjorie.
Hello, Jim.
Well, this is what we're guessing you're hearing nonstop on radio and TV.
Hi, everyone. How you doing? My TV meteorologist, Al Capri. We have amplitudinal jet stream. There's a lot of amplitude, and we're going to start, folks, warming up.
Oh, I know. It was 94 a few minutes ago. So.
Oh, wow.
It's already topping 80 degrees this morning. Power grids also being pushed to their limits.
Your air conditions, your square window fans, and your stand-up fans.
Get a shallow tray, fill it with ice, and then stick it in front of your fan.
People in Boston, buy your bottle of water, drink lots of water, don't drink anything else like soda or juice.
So about a month or so ago, we shared with you our secrets for dealing with oppressive heat, but we felt that the fact that triple digits were here merited a return to the topic. So here's the deal. We'll share our thoughts if you share yours. How far has the heat pushed you? Are you wearing personalized fans? Did you spend all day at the movies? Did you suck up your hatred of those creepy ice cream truck music things to buy a snow cone? Our number is 877-301-8970. What are you doing? We're not minimizing the danger. We had the Commissioner of Public Health here yesterday. It's a dangerous kind of thing, but most of us are going ahead with our normal plans. And we want to know how you're coping with the fact that we have, even if it doesn't hit 100 as such, even though it's rumored to be, whatever that thing is called, the feel of the temperature, because the humidity could be as high as 110. Yeah, whatever it is.
Virtual sauna bath sort of sums it up.
877-301-8970. For new listeners, Marjorie will mention the wet sheet thing again in a couple of minutes, and we will share with you some products you can buy on television.
Yeah.
That may help.
But I know that now from watching Broadside at NACN. I know that your chief sponsor, we're going to mention them.
It's not my chief sponsor. It's a sponsor on the station. I've spoken to three people this morning. I've spoken to a lot of people this morning. Three people who told me the second they got out of work today, what are they doing, Marjorie?
They're going swimming.
They're going to the movies.
They're going to the movies.
Because it's all AC all the time.
Well,
plus, you can
idea.
Have a fun.
And they have all those community centers in Boston where people can go if they don't have air conditioning in their own house. So that's really, you can bring your books down there, bring your iPad down there, you know, hang out, play cards and stuff like that and be in the air conditioning all day long. Of course, most of us with pets have the AC going all day long so the pets don't get overheated.
Now, I've mentioned repeatedly in the last several days that I acknowledge that I am probably the most complaining human being on the planet, but I never complain about the heat nor the humidity. Where are you on that? I'm not even sure where you are. I know you'd like to be cool and you do the wet sheet thing and somewhere and you have an air conditioner somewhere in your house, but how do you react to this? When you come, for example, when you leave GBH and you walk out on a guest street, you're hit with a pretty serious blast of hot air. How's that affect you?
Well, I would rather be on Cape Cod. I would rather be in a cool place.
Because of the breeze, you mean?
Yeah, well, just because you can go swimming. In the city in the summer is tough. You know, you used to live in New York City.
I did.
I mean, I don't think you want to be in the middle of New York City in the summer. You know why? Because all those piles of garbage bags that they have lined up all over the place in the middle of the summertime, it's not a good smell.
No,
but in the
plus,
middle of July.
No. The plus of living in New York City in this kind of heat is you're able to say on virtually every opportunity, you could fry an egg on the sidewalk. It doesn't matter whether you can or not.
You can.
That's what everybody says. this? What do you mean you can't?
We talked about the Amtrak trains yesterday, and we mentioned them again today, that they've had difficulty on the Amtrak trains because the tracks are made out of steel, and the steel, what?
Expands. So they're actually, for those who don't know, Amtrak between Boston, I think in Washington, maybe it's just New York, is slowing down the speeds on virtually all the trains because of the track expansion that Marjorie mentioned.
See the picture in the paper today? I forget it was in the Herald or the Globe. One of them had this.
What's that?
A great picture of the zookeepers up at the Stoneham Zoo.
No.
They're hosing down the llamas.
Yeah.
The llamas standing there getting
llamas,
sprayed.
Llamas, we call
llamas,
them.
Llamas, whatever they
yes,
are.
Yeah.
And you know the other thing that's great, too?
No,
if your pets don't usually, I mean, some dogs love to swim, like labs, and but some dogs don't like the water. But it is so hot now, if you get out the face cloth and you just soothe the put the face cloth on the dog, they're really happy.
I loved you and Brian McGorry from the Globe communing the other day about air conditioning for your dogs. 877-301-8970. We're going to give you a couple of suggestions from our end. We want to know, how are you coping? And by the way, particularly if you're coping in a way that would allow other listeners to adopt your coping mechanisms to get through at least what appears to be the next 36 hours of pretty intense heat.
Rick in the car, how are you keeping cool, Rick in the car?
Oh, it isn't easy, Marjorie. I'll tell you that much. I'm an HVAC, air conditioning repair technician.
Whoa.
Yeah, we've been out straight, as you guys can probably imagine, since this whole heat wave has begun. So I just wanted to ask your listeners, you know, if you have a guy working on your air conditioner, offer him something to drink, a bottle of water, you know, an opportunity to cool off a little
That'd
bit.
Be nice,
I'm
yeah.
sure he'd appreciate it very much. I know I do.
Now, Rick, are you gouging people at this time of year because of how...
I don't have time to gouge people. I'm straight out.
Now, wait,
the next.
Wait a minute. Now, Rick, are you for the people with central air?
Yeah, central air conditioning. Mostly I deal with commercial and institutional.
Yeah.
But even you know, everybody, all of us who work in heating and air conditioning at this time, we're pretty busy, and we appreciate those customers who show us a little... little appreciation by giving us a bottle.
You know,
of water
when I listen, you know, when I listen to Rick, I feel the same way I felt when we were having this discussion the other day about people, that DeSteno guy from Northeastern, about people, only 33% of Bostonians getting up when a person on crutches gets in the subway.
Yes.
What kind of person has Rick come into their business and doesn't offer him or a Rick like character a bottle of water or something to drink?
If the air conditioning is broken, it's got to be pretty hot in those big industrial commercial buildings, Rick, if the AC is not working.
Absolutely. You know, we're either up in an attic or a mechanical room or up on the roof in the blazing sun.
Oh,
so,
God.
Yeah.
You should adopt this motto. No water, no fix. That's what it should be. Rick, thank you for the call and good luck with the day. This is a good day to be kind to your fellow man and woman. And as the commissioner of Bartlett from Public Health said yesterday, obviously this is a time you should tend to neighbors who are older and to make sure, particularly if there are some who can't afford air conditioning, all that sort of stuff. What?
You always ridicule me for my wet sheet suggestion.
Yeah.
Art from West Bridgewater just emailed. He said he did the wet sheet thing last night. We'll probably do it again tonight. Works great.
Is that really so?
Yes.
For those who don't know, because I can't stand hearing this again, Marjorie puts her sheets in the washer, doesn't dry them, puts them on the bed. You think it's going to be moldy. It isn't. If you don't want to do that, you spray your sheets with a sprayer, and then it doesn't get moldy or smelly, and apparently you stay cool until you fall asleep. Enough of that. 877. That is it.
Did you ever try it?
No.
Well,
877-301-8970.
Knock it. Do you try it?
I told you, the best purchase one can make, I've said this repeatedly, it's not really a secret anymore. Generally for $5 or $6 at a CVS kind of place, you can buy one of those great fans that's attached to a water bottle, and you spray in people's faces, you spray in your own face. You see that's one nice thing you can do if you're walking down the street, for example, and you see someone who's obviously, you don't even have to say, just spray them in the face. Walk up to them, spray them a little bit, and it's amazing what kind of relationships can be built out of that.
Did you see the great picture of the paper today of the guy standing on the corner? I think he was down by Park Street, and he looks just exhausted, and he's got a fan in his hand. He just went to the store and bought a fan. He's lucky he can still get them because I bet they're in hot demand these days. Ernie in the truck, how are you keeping cool, Ernie?
We have air conditioning now.
Good.
I followed it from the other station, too, and I really enjoy it.
Thank you
for doing it.
A lot of people don't know what personal hygiene is, and that really helps if you keep yourself clean.
Yeah, that's a very important thing. You mean for others. It doesn't keep you cool, but it's a kind thing for others, you mean, Ernie?
Yeah.
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 It does keep you cool. If you're all oily, you're going to be sweaty, you know?
Now, that's a good point. Taking a shower and cleaning up for yourself and others. Ernie, thank you for following us over here. We appreciate
it. That's the problem for the dogs.
What's
either covered with fur or they're covered with hair. And in either case, imagine if your whole body was covered with hair, Jim, like 3 inches of it,
yeah,
curly.
Yeah, I do.
Like spoolies.
When I was younger, it was. Now, let me just say to you, since you mentioned your dogs, what we thought we would do is a public service. There are commercials on television that both have products that are great for humans, that like you and me, mm-hmm. or products that are fabulous for animals like your dog. What's the dog's name again?
Harry the P.
Best dog
from
C to C. So let's treat you. Here's some commercials for some of these products that could change you and your dog's life.
Introducing Chillo, the amazing new pillow pack that transforms your pillow into a chillo. Look, pillows trap body heat, increasing perspiration, but Chillo keeps your head cool and dry.
Introducing an innovative new golf cart cooling system from Oramist that is set to revolutionize the way people enjoy the game of golf.
In my line of work, I don't really have the option to stop working when it gets too hot or humid. So how do you keep working and get a break from the heat? Nothing's really worked for me until this. Mission's EnduraCool Instant Cooling Towel. Just soak, wring, snap, and it cools in seconds.
I personally will go for the Chillo. The Chillo is apparently a faux pillow, which you fill with water, then put it in the freezer.
That's right.
Now, Chelsea, what's the name of the thing you do with your dogs again? There is something called Frosty Paws is advertised on television, and that apparently can keep your dog, obviously, cool
now,
in these difficult times.
The Chillo Pillow, as I said, is a chief sponsor of Jim's show.
It's not a chief sponsor. It's a sponsor on some shows.
If you
there.
Buy one, you get one half price or something. Mm-hmm. They're $12.99.
Okay.
And I did go to Consumer Reports to investigate the Chillo Pillow, Jim.
And what'd they say
I don't want to
Did you really go to Consumer? What'd they say?
Actually, it was AOL.com.
What'd they say?
Investigation of the Chillo Pillow.
How's it work?
Well, they said the problem with the Chillo Pillow is it's chilly for about 20 minutes. And then it warms up.
Yeah, but you know, it's sort of like your wet sheet thing. You want a serious
result. No,
the goal is
you
fall asleep, and once you've fallen asleep, very few people are awakened by the heat.
The wet
if you
sheets
can fall asleep,
last till about 2 o'clock in the morning. The Chillo Pillow lasts for 20 minutes.
I personally can't speak for you. I am a Chillo Pillow kind of person, and will always be. Let's go to Fred in Boston. You're on Boston Public Radio on a really hot day with Jim and Marjorie. Hey there, Fred.
Hey, Jim and Marjorie. Fred from Maine, from 12 years ago, you and I talked.
Oh, Fred, we remember you. Believe
Hi,
it or
Fred.
Not, Fred, what's up?
Oh, yeah, listen, I got three tips for you. Three ways to stay cool.
Got write them down, Marjorie.
Get under the harbor, get on a tall ship, and go out for a sail in the harbor. That's very important.
Okay, I'll be doing that.
Drink one cold beer with one cold bottle of water, and you'll be fine. The second one, jump in the fountain down there by Milk Street, where all of the kids are in. Just go in with all your clothes on, walk around, you'll be fine.
Wait a minute. You mean the Christian Science? You mean the Christian Science fountain? Is that what you mean?
No, I don't know. Didn't know it had a secular persuasion there.
Well, that's actually one of the great fountains in Boston behind the Christian Science. I don't know
Milk
either.
Street.
But you find a fountain and do it. There's one on the Greenway, too. What's your third thing, Fred?
Get in the car and drive to Maine at high speed. That's what I'm doing right now.
Hey, Fred, we've missed you for years. Stay in touch with us. It's great to hear from you again. Fred, thanks.
I'm really glad to hear you guys back in the air. I love you guys. Take care.
Fred, you're very kind.
Monday
thanks
through
so much.
Friday, noon to 2.
We are.
Now, the thing about Maine you. That you have to remember is the water is colder up there. There is an issue now with the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Plant because...
This is serious, by the way. This is not...
It is serious because the water has been above 75 degrees mm-hmm. a couple of times this week. And if it's persistently above 75 degrees, they can't use it to cool down the power plant. And what's kind of scary for you...
This is because when they built these plants, the expectation was that water would not get hotter than that. Is that not
exactly,
what it is?
Exactly, which is sort of scary in terms of global warming.
Indeed.
And the Pilgrim plant is not even that old. So back whenever it was, 25, 30, 35 years ago when they built the Pilgrim plant, they did not anticipate that water would ever be above 75 degrees in Cape Cod, and indeed it is.
Our numbers are 877. Our number is 877-301-8970. We're trying to help you cope with a really hot day or two, and hopefully you will help us do the same. Let's go to Barbara in Rhode Island.
Hi.
Hello. Here's my trick for stay-at-home comfort. Marjorie, your sheet idea is superb.
Isn't it great? Thank you.
Yes, indeed. And you put on your cheap, thin T-shirt. You have to do this at home.
Yeah.
And you sit down to watch, you know, Jim Browdy on television or something.
That's right, with the Chillo ads.
Right, and you go get your sprayer for the plants, and you soak yourself, wet T-shirt, and sit in front of the plant, and you will be chilly. chilly in no time. Yeah.
That's a variation on the wet T-shirt contest. This is just when you're alone at your own home, correct, Barbara?
It does work.
Hey, Barbara, it's a rotten connection, so we got to let you go, but we're always glad to talk to you. Thank you so much
for the
call.
Well, it's the same theory as the wet sheets. You do the wet sheets, or if you don't have time to do the wet sheets, you don't want to do the wet sheets, you just do the wet T-shirt or a wet underwear, whatever you wear to bed at night. You just spray yourself down, you climb right in.
You know, I am a bit of a planner in life. You mm-hmm. are, I don't mean this critically, I think you'd acknowledge, you're not exactly what one would call a planner. Can we agree? You're a reactor kind of thing. Okay. There is nothing, occasionally when I react as opposed to plan, there is nothing more depressing. Then finally decide, am I going to buy an extra air conditioner? I don't know if I want to spend the $200. Okay, I'm going to buy it because it's a really hot day for my kid, the pet, the whatever. And you go to Home Depot, which you know has 10,000 air conditioners, and you get there, and what happens?
Sold out.
They're all sold out.
I know. Happened to me.
That's why planning. I'm shocked that happened to you. That's why, I mean, it's and fans, the same thing. You have to do a little planning.
But you know something? Last year, when we went through a hot spell like this, because I didn't have air conditioner. Well, I had one in my kid's room because the children are always complaining. But I didn't have one like in the downstairs for the main living area, and people, and they said, oh no, it's not going to work because you have an open seating plan or open floor plan, whatever that is. And I did buy one, a big powerful air conditioner. It cost me about $400, and it does work. You know, it doesn't clean the hole or air out the hole downstairs, mm-hmm. but when you walk from like the kitchen into where the air conditioner is working in the living room,
By the way, they're doing a great thing at our place, WGBH News. If you get a photograph, this is actually a great thing. Take a photograph of your thermometer as the day goes along and email to to BPR, as in Boston Public Radio, BPR at WGBH.org, or is it WGBHnews.org? Well, try both of those things. And they're going to put them up in a slideshow, which is pretty great. And if you have actually any other great photos that relate to suffering or existing or surviving in the heat, send them along as well. Again, that's BPR, apparently at WGBH.org. Let's go back to the phones, Margaret.
Hal in East Boston, thank you for calling. Hi, Hal.
Hello, greetings. I just wanted to pass along something that your listeners can find on YouTube, and that is something that is called, it's a homemade device called a redneck air conditioner.
And what is it?
It's a foam chest that you put in bottles of frozen water, you know, half-gallon plastic jug that you would do up in your freezer. And you attach a, you cut a hole and attach a fan to it, and also a piece of PVC pipe, and when you turn on the fan, that apparently blows cold air out. I haven't tried this. I don't know if it works, but I think it ought to, at least in a, perhaps in a one-room situation.
Well, in a primitive way, that is actually great. So what is it on YouTube, Redneck Air Conditioner?
Yeah, just dial that, just type that in, and you'll find several sites that show how people make these, contrive these things.
Terrific.
Themselves.
It's not quite the Chillo or Frosty Paws, but it's a good idea. Thank you, Hal, for the tip. We appreciate it. 877-301-8970. Let's try one more call, Marjorie.
Elliot in the garden. Ooh, hi, Elliot.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Hi.
I just last week drove across the country, actually, in a car that didn't have any air conditioning.
Oh.
Just, kept myself cool by just using a spare T-shirt or a hand towel that I just soak in water and drape around my neck. And, of course, drinking a lot of water as well, but that really helps.
Well, you know, if a more sophisticated version of what you're talking about, if you go to one of those REI kind of stores or EMI or whatever they are, EMS, my apologies, they have these little rag kind of things that look like washcloths, which if you wet, they do exactly what you're suggesting, Elliot, but they stay wet. I have no idea how. I've bought them in the past much longer. But that idea, that towel thing or T-shirt thing around the neck that's wet, really does the trick. Elliot, thanks. This is the last one. Brett, you're in the car. You're on with Jim and Marjorie on Boston Public Radio. Hey there, Brett.
Hey, how you doing?
Excellent.
Good.
You must have air conditioning.
We do.
We do.
Nice. I've taken,
you know what I'm going to do, actually, Brett, before you continue, I'm going to turn it off right now just so that we're like people who are suffering. Go ahead, Brett.
Well, I'm from California originally, and in Southern California, this is just another day. So I'm not suffering at all. I'm actually quite comfortable. But I'm also one of the crazier folk out there, so I guess that kind of fits in. More to the point of crazy, I took a couple of extreme weather survival courses, one of which was in the desert, going from walking from Barstow, California to Las Vegas.
Oh.
About 7 days.
How hot does it get?
127 degrees on our high day.
You mean actual degrees as opposed to the real, how it feels to you?
Yeah, no, we didn't go by the real deal. Yeah,
whatever.
We went by the mercury thermometer strapped to the side of our bag.
So what did you learn about how one survives on 127-degree weather?
Well, there's a couple of things. Be careful walking on black surfaces with shoes that aren't thick enough to insulate you, because you can burn your feet. You won't feel it until the blisters form. So it's very careful. Don't barefoot black in direct sun.
Okay.
But the most important thing, or the most useful thing that I've learned, is you take a very strong peppermint-based soap, Castile soap. Dr. Bronner's Castile soap works great.
Mm-hmm.
And in the morning, before you go to work, scrub off the top layer of skin using a very strong peppermint-based soap. It takes between 8 and 10 hours for your body to regenerate those skin cells. But in the meantime, your skin is even more susceptible to feeling air move across it. And you get that feeling of getting a chill, even on the hottest day out there. You can be walking through the Mojave Desert with the sun beating straight down on the back of your neck, and if you've scrubbed off the skin cells, you actually feel the breeze going across, and you catch a chill.
So wait a second. Is it the scrubbing off the skin cells or the mint or a combination of both? What does the trick?
I've done both, and both work, but they work best in concert.
Hey, Brett, thank you for a very creative suggestion. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to be doing that anytime soon.
By the way, a caller we're not getting to, Linda says, from Rehoboth, frozen carrots for dogs, Marjorie. Try that with Harry when you
go. And also you pour beef broth into little yogurt containers and freeze that, and they love that. That's an alternative to frosted paws. We just got an email from someone, Winchester Savings Bank thermometer, 101 degrees. That's what it says. Okay.
It's a scorcher.
We've talked a lot about George Zimmerman acquittals, the acquittal of George Zimmerman this week, but one person we haven't heard from yet is Callie Crossley. We're going to get her take on the aftermath of the trial next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
What's happening at the Boston Summer Arts Weekend, After Dark?
Friday night, July 26th.
A feast of jazz and blues for a sultry summer night with New Orleans legend Dr. John and the Preservation Hall Jazz Band.
And Saturday night, July 27th.
Benny Noir's diva, Angelique Kidjo, rocks the house with Carlos Nunez and Session Americana.
Presented by Citizens Bank.
Check out the entire lineup and reserve your spot now at bostonsummerarts.com.
This program is made possible thanks to you and Northeastern University, where researchers are engineering new construction materials and methods to build 21st century sustainable cities. Learn how Northeastern is making tomorrow happen at northeastern.edu/tomorrow. And Washington Week, the latest addition to WGBH's public affairs lineup. Friday nights, join Gwen Ifill and kick off an evening of lively debate and fresh insights. That's Fridays starting at 8 on WGBH 44.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I am Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan. This woman joins us every Friday at about this time in Studio 3. She is host of Under the Radar with Callie Crossley, which plays every single Sunday night at 6:30. Obviously, she would be Callie Crossley. Hey, Callie.
Hey,
hi, Callie.
How are you doing with it? By the way, before we get to the topics at hand, we were talking heat. How do you do with the heat? You're a Southern kid, too.
Yes, and we like air conditioning. And so guess what happened last night? My air decided to die. Yes, don't even speak to me about it. Don't even speak to me about it. So I'm calling this morning to my guy, begging him. And of course, he says, I'm slammed, but I'll run by your house and try to figure it out.
Is this a wall one or
no? It's central air, but it's blowing hot air for whatever reason.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
be great for winter.
Yeah,
okay.
I know.
Okay, enough of that.
Okay, well, Callie, as you know, and the whole country's been transfixed this week by the acquittal of George Zimmerman. He, of course, was accused of second degree murder and the death of the Florida unarmed black teenager Trayvon Martin. Now we've just heard from Trayvon Martin's parents. Here is his father talking to Matt Lauer yesterday on the Today Show.
Was he racially profiled? I think that if Trayvon had been white, this wouldn't have never happened.
So, Callie, what's your take? I'm dying here on the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman acquittal.
Well, my take is he never should have gotten out of the car. And I'm still, I understand legally, you know, where what they looked at and what their jury instructions were. But how juror number 37 can say it was his fault after he was stalking, and that really is what he was doing. He was stalking Trayvon Martin. And I guess I don't understand the huge empathy gap of people not getting that if you're where you're supposed to be, as Trayvon was, walking where he was supposed to be, and some strange guy is following you, that would make you nervous.
Well, what do you think what do you think of what Trayvon Martin's father just said, the racially profiled thing?
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
Of course. I mean, and we've talked about this before. There are many phone calls from George Zimmerman calling in, and every call he made was
to 911.
To 911. Yeah. Every call he made in his role as neighborhood watchman was about, you know, black kids in the neighborhood. So, and what was interesting is somebody pointed out in the, I guess, in the trial that one of the neighbors said he knew everybody in the neighborhood, but obviously, you know, Tracy Martin was living there and he didn't know him, and nor did he know that Trayvon Martin was his son and walking there.
You know, we had Peniel Joseph here on Monday after the verdict. And we talked about, I had just looked up a poll from 10 years after the O.J. Simpson verdict, 10 years after, and the same racial divide that existed immediately after the acquittal in the murder case, not in the civil suit that followed, existed. Something like, and I may be off a point or two, 87% of whites thought that he was guilty, only 27% of blacks. And we said to Peniel, is there going to be a racial divide here again? And he said, oh, no, there are tons of whites. The sense I get is that there is a total race. I don't mean without some exceptions, a total racial divide. Blacks think an injustice was done. Most whites think, hey, facts just weren't there. The jury did what they had to do.
Well, I think that in sheer numbers, overwhelmingly, that is true. However, I have to say, there's some pretty, you know, even folks who are not prominent, names that you wouldn't know. There's a young woman whose videotape on YouTube has sort of gone viral. It's now posted on The Root. And she has a whole powerful video statement. She's a young white woman saying, I am not Trayvon Martin. And she said, white kids, get over it. It would not happen to you. And here's why. And she lays it out. And she's someone about Trayvon's age. And so you're seeing that kind of stuff all over the place, you know, really across the board in terms of people just saying, hey, you know, he was where he was supposed to be. This falls back on the stand your ground laws is really what it comes down to.
But you're a black woman. You've
yes,
talked
I
to
am.
Me before about years ago getting
yeah.
pulled over.
Very
in a,
insightful,
in a,
Marguerite.
I've been profiled.
You've been profiled.
Yes.
And when you ask people, your friends or anybody who's black, the stories come pouring out.
Right.
You know,
it's a typical
now,
experience.
In Massachusetts, I've told the story before about one of my daughter's friends' father's waiting for her outside my house. He's waiting for her outside my house. He's about 60 years old. The cops pull him over. Now, thank goodness they didn't pull him over because he wasn't driving, but what are you doing here? Thank goodness he had a badge.
Wait a second. We don't know this guy. How about somebody we know? Eric
yes.
Holder at the NAACP,
Eric
the Attorney
Holder.
General,
yes.
says when he was a prosecutor not so long ago, prior to being Attorney mm-hmm. General, he is running to a movie in Georgetown, Washington, because he's afraid he's going to be late, and he is stopped by the police. I had Deval Patrick on the other night, and I read an excerpt from his book, Reason to Believe, where he's describing walking to the home of the woman he called his surrogate mother in Milton, when he was at Milton Academy. And he said virtually every time he walked to her house, virtually every time, admittedly it was another time I know, he was stopped
by
the police.
Well, you're missing my point, though. My point is this happens all the time now in Massachusetts. That's my point. Don't you hear this all the time?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that is why some parents try to be proactive and actually in neighborhoods where they assume their assumptions will be made negatively, go to the police station and say, here's my kid. He's supposed to be there, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, that to me is ridiculous. That's where we are in 2013. So if you understand that that is happening now a lot by people, you know, understand that we all felt it. I feel it deeply. I'm so saddened by it to know exactly what was happening when that kid was walking through the neighborhood and George Zimmerman presumed he should not be there. And I have a nephew around the same age. It makes me so nervous. I can't even tell you.
Let's add one piece of sound to this. Most people have heard this, but it bears repeating. This is the unidentified juror, B37, the first one to speak from, obviously, the Zimmerman trial, speaking to Anderson Cooper on CNN.
Did George Zimmerman profile Trayvon Martin because he was African-American?
No. I think he just profiled him because he was the neighborhood watch, and he profiled anybody that came in acting strange.
You know, the most frightening part of that was not that she concluded. I can live with her, Callie, concluding that he was not racially profiled. That's her opinion. What she said is they never discussed race in the in the 16 hours of deliberations. They never discussed racial profiling. So it's one thing to discount it after having been deliberating about it. But it seems like there is almost total, and not all seems, there is almost total denial.
Well, you know what I what just strikes me in that comment is that she doesn't get that the acting suspicious was only that he was black and walking through the neighborhood. That's the acting suspicious. That's what she doesn't seem to respond to.
I don't think she gets it, frankly, because it's not part of her experience. And there was not a single person of color. Now, there was one woman
who was
supposedly
was
Hispanic on the jury, but that was, I don't think Latinos get the same looks as 6'2" black kids do. I just don't.
Well, some of them do.
I don't think it's as I think it's a lot about the darkness of the skin color, frankly.
Absolutely.
So that's the other thing. How can it be in 2013, in a case with this kind of racial overtone, that you could sit a jury of all white people and one Hispanic? I just don't get that either.
Well, for me, again, it comes back to the empathy gap. And Michelle Martin, who is a host on a program that follows.
Terrific.
Yes, it's a great program called Tell Me More. Actually interviewed a local guy here, a local Harvard professor, who's done a very intense study about racial empathy and lack thereof. And the presumption is that most black people don't have any feelings about hurt. And so therefore, they don't feel pain is what he came out of his study. Now, that's in addition to, of course, the very well-known and often cited research out of Harvard about unconscious bias, which I believe was at play here all the way through, where, you know, we all have stuff going on in the back of our minds, and we may not articulate it, but it comes out in how we view things. That's this work done at Harvard and there's a test you can go on and take just to see where you fall in terms of unconscious.
So what happens?
Hold on for a second.
But my point is that
pain,
all this
what do you
came
mean?
In.
Emotional pain or physical
emotional
pain?
Emotional and physical pain.
Both kinds.
What happens now? So what's
that
what happens?
Black people somehow have a lack thereof, and so that people perceive them to have lack thereof.
World.
Oh, I'm
I mean,
saying
post-trade,
yes.
But we're 6 days in.
Yes.
We heard from one juror. We've heard from the parents. What happens in the world at large? There's been some criticism of Barack Obama for not making, trying to start that infamous race conversation we've been talking about probably for my whole lifetime. It's never really happened. I mean, what does happen that doesn't cause this to be just something we look back on as an outcome in 2013?
Well, I'm writing about this and have a commentary on Monday about I don't think that the national race conversation makes sense to me. But what makes sense to me is that there has to be small conversations, one-on-one, two-on-one, three-on-one group, but with people who are determined to have the conversation and want to have it and understand that having it is really not a comfortable place to be. And that you only get there if you commit some time and energy to it. And at the end of it, you may not always be on the same page, but you'll have a comfort level that we just don't have.
Yeah, but Kelly, the people who are willing to engage in that, I think you used the word willing or whatever you said, willing to engage, it seems to me, are not the people who need to be part of that conversation.
Well,
think those are the people who would say, we were in the jury room, we never talked about race,
absolutely true, but I think that any time that you have some inroads on it, what we have now is silence. Even those people who are willing to commit mostly are silent as well. So as we know, from many other movements, silence is death. So you have to have some conversation about it. It has to be out here on the table, and people have to get to a point where you can at least talk about it and understand all the nuance and understand that I, as a black person, knows what happened with that jury instruction and that stand your ground laws. And by the way, I brought this information because this is right to the heart of this. A lot of people are citing this, our very own frontline piece that they did in 2012 with the Urban Institute's Justice Policy Center. And they found that in stand your ground states, white people who kill black people are 354% more likely to be found justified in their killings. And in non-stand your ground states, it only goes down to 250%. And by the way, even if it's black on black crime or black on white crime, a black defendant is unlikely to get a self-defense ruling in his or her favor. And you've talked here about the one in Florida happening right now where the black woman shot over the head of the guy in her house.
Over the head of her abusive husband.
Exactly. To warn him. She didn't want to kill him. If that's not stand your ground, what is it? And she gets 20 years.
I know.
It makes no sense. And the husband's alive. The abusive husband's alive.
So on that upbeat note, what are you doing on Under the Radar on a Sunday night at 6:30?
Yeah. I know. There is no transition.
What are you doing?
Well, the study is not under the radar, but the evidence and the documentation from the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy comes right on time as we're in the middle of still discussing immigration reform. And they just came out with some very hard facts and figures that undocumented, that means folks who are not legal, immigrants in this country pay taxes, both federal and state, to a total of $10.6 billion. And if, given immigration reform goes through, they would end up paying $2 billion more. And they break it down by sales and excise taxes. It's $8.1 billion, $1.2 in income taxes, and $1.2 in property taxes. These are undocumented folks. So, you know, there's this ongoing conversation about the drain on the economy and the drain on our society by undocumented immigrants. I am not, you know, standing up saying people should not be chastised for being illegal. I'm not saying that. But I am saying that we have to look at some of this other evidence as well about, and I think some of the other governmental agencies have tried to say that in this discussion about immigration reform, that actually people are working and paying into the society. And were they not living in the shadows, however we decide to make this reform, some of them not living in the shadows, we actually would benefit more as a society by their labor and their input.
Well, you know,
which is interesting.
In the House, you know, which is where this whole thing could fall apart, a lot of the people who are creating the obstacle to the pathway to citizenship are ones who are the ultimate bottom liners. And while I don't hold out huge hope that something's going to get through the House, maybe hard numbers and increasing bottom lines or what does. You know what's interesting? We should mention, we've been critical off and on through the years of Paul Ryan, who ran as the vice presidential nominee,
yes,
with Mitt Romney, budget chair in the House. Paul Ryan has been a passionate advocate for a comprehensive immigration reform policy in the House. And if anybody pulls this out, if it's pulled out in the House, this guy may end up deserving a huge amount of credit.
Well,
and he's
I
a numbers
hate to be
person.
Cynical, mm-hmm. But why do you think he's doing that?
I don't care why he's doing it. I don't care if it's for reasons of ambition. If the outcome is good and we finally deal with this intractable problem.
And I have to say at this point, for him to say something, I mean, it's going up against a big juggernaut of people who are very mad on the other side that anybody would be in support of immigration reform.
Indeed. So that's Sunday at 6:30. We'll be listening. It's Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. Callie, great to see you.
Good to see you.
Thank you for being with us, Callie. And Callie is with us every Friday at about 12:20, 12:25, something like that. So up next, the 2013 Emmys have just been announced. We're going to talk to our favorite movie critic, Marjorie. He's a TV critic. Knows all about the Emmys, all about television. Bob Thompson from Syracuse University. That conversation is next on 89.7 WGBH.
I'm Philip Martin. I live here, and I report here.
Without ever knowing it, you've driven the same routes, passed the same landmarks, and used the same rest stops as today's human trafficking networks.
You know, I think I'm always in reporter mode.
Who's orchestrating this trafficking network from New York to New England?
And it's so important to be aware of the things that are going on in our life and to incorporate that into journalism.
Philip Martin, WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
This program is on WGBH thanks to you and the 18th Annual Boston French Film Festival, showing at the Museum of Fine Arts now through July 28th. You can see award-winning films with stars Audrey Tautou, Isabelle Huppert, and more. Tickets at mfa.org. And Blue Homes, building modern style and green homes. On July 19th and 20th, Blue Homes is hosting a Breeze House tour in Copake, New York, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. More at bluhomes.com/tour.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I am Jim Browdy, and she is Marjorie Egan.
Such a waste of talent. He chose money over power. In this town, a mistake nearly everyone makes. Money is the McMansion in Sarasota that starts falling apart after 10 years. Power is the old stone building that stands for centuries. I cannot respect someone who doesn't see the difference.
That, of course, is from Netflix surprise hit and Emmy nominee House of Cards. Joining us to discuss all the Emmys, the nominees were yesterday, is Bob Thompson. He's the director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at the Newhouse School of Public Communications at Syracuse University. Welcome back, Bob.
Thank you for having me.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for being here. So what's the takeaway? What's the headline for the Emmy nominations 2013? Overall theme?
Well, I suppose the big news is that now direct-to-internet programming has reached the big time. Netflix is playing the palace. It's been nominated for Emmys. I don't think broadband shows could even be nominated until about 2007. And right out of the gate, they start doing this original programming. And whether the model is going to work on a long-term basis, we've yet to see. But I think people, serious producers and writers, now are putting Netflix right in that same category with HBO and FX and AMC as the exciting place to do innovative new stuff on television. And the other lesson is that the broadcast networks are not the exciting place to do new stuff on television. If you look at those nominations across the board, cable, pay cable, and now even direct to internet absolutely overwhelms the old big three networks. And the one big winner in broadcast television is a PBS show, Downton Abbey.
Which we love here at WGBH.
We do love it.
So are the network drama types, all the execs, are they basically doing the white flag thing, or are they going to try to fight back, or they say it's over for us?
Well, yeah, they keep trying. I mean, it's not quite a surrender, although there does seem to be a real sense that the ship is going down. But Under the Dome debuted this summer as a drama, serialized, serious, big-budget program, and did pretty well. I think there's going to be certain types of shows that the networks just may as well not bother trying to do because cable can do them so much better. But the networks are still putting on dramas. Some of them still catch on. And I think they're also realizing that they can play by some of cable's games. A lot of these new shows networks are looking at now, they're thinking of doing the abbreviated seasons. Under the Dome's 13 episodes. I think 24 is only going to be 12 when it comes back. And that was one of the many advantages cable had, is they didn't have to churn out and grind out 22 episodes per season. The Sopranos, 13 episodes per season, and when they felt like taking off, I don't know, 21 months between seasons, they did it.
Yeah, but I'm so glad you brought that up, which I would not have, but since you have, I hate it. I mean, there's almost not a day that goes by that I don't turn to my kid and say, when's Homeland coming back?
Yeah,
I used to say,
is
The Sopranos ever going to come back? Why is that good for business? Why do they do this?
Well, it isn't good for business. I mean, when they have a big hit like Homeland or one of these things, they'd happily be able to, if they could manage to keep putting this stuff out week after week after week, they'd love to. But the fact is, you cannot make high-quality drama like that on order. You can't grind it out like you can a Chevy off of a Detroit assembly line. But you are absolutely right. This is the one big downfall. There is nothing like the feeling when, let's say, you've been binging on the first two seasons of Breaking Bad that you that you missed, and then you've got to start watching it like everybody else on a week-to-week basis. And there is that horrible feeling when you watch the final episode and you know that it's going to be, 12 months before you see another one, and you feel somehow aesthetically bereft.
That's a great line, aesthetically bereft.
Bob, did you just say that 24 is coming back?
I think it's coming back in a 12-episode bundle, if I'm not mistaken.
With Kiefer Sutherland, the whole nine yards?
Right, yeah.
Wow.
Well,
the new edition is going to be called 12, is that correct? Is that right, Bob?
What's that?
Is the new edition going to be called 12 based on
what
you're saying?
It should be, because that's
I'm sorry, go ahead.
What it's going to be. But I think this is a model we're going to see networks going more and more towards, and it's worked really well for cable. All these great shows, the ones we see in the nominations, are generally 12, 13 episode sorts of things. And there's a lot of other advantages to that. You're right, the disadvantage is it goes away for long periods of time. Though let's remember, when the Who Shot JR episode played in the spring, it was not till, I don't think it was till November when we finally found out who shot JR. It was practically 6 months before we finally found that out. So even back in the old network days. You had to at least sit through a summer and sometimes further than that. But there are other advantages besides just the fact that you can really concentrate on getting these things right in 13 hours as opposed to twice that. And that is, you don't wear out the characters. I mean, I think one of the problems of network television was that you ran out of things to say. Hamlet is maybe one of the greatest bits of drama ever written. But if Hamlet had gone on for 8 years, we'd have gotten sick and tired of his whining.
That's true. That's true. We're talking with Bob Thompson from the Bleier Center, excuse me, for Television and Popular Culture at the Newhouse School of Public Communications at Syracuse University about the 2013 nominations for the Emmys. So who are the big winners?
Well, interestingly enough, I think at the head of the pack with 17 nominations is FX's American Horror Story, its second installment. And it's this kind of ensemble repertory series. And what's interesting about this, everybody's heard about Mad Men. They've seen the covers of the magazines. They see all the people hosting Saturday Night Live and all the rest of it. Everybody's heard about Breaking Bad. Whether they've seen it or not, they know that it's one of the great moments in American dramaturgy. But American Horror Story got a critical acclaim, but it's one of those things that is not getting that kind of attention. I've got a class of master's students that I'm teaching this semester, about 36, 37 of them. And after these nominations came out, I asked how many people had ever seen American Horror Story. Only two people raised their hands, and a number of them, and mind you, these are television students, master's degree students, no less, a bunch of them didn't really even know what it was or where they could watch it or anything like that. So when a show like that gets top of the pack 17 nominations in this age where you can then simply go seek it out, find it, and watch it, I think it will be, those nominations will be very good for raising the consciousness about the existence, if nothing else, of that program.
Let's say, by the way, unless in case listeners are not part of those two students of yours, this is a show set in, what is it, the 60s, about a church-run haven for the insane, with Jessica Lange playing a great character, I think, Sister Jude. Number two in nominees was Game of Thrones. I have to say, my kid can't get enough of Game of Thrones. She's 19. It is the most, at least in my estimation, the most gratuitously violent show
gross.
I have ever. And by the way, I'm not as troubled by violence in media as fiction as Marjorie is. But Game of Thrones is so over the top. That wedding thing. I mean, I was having nightmares for a week.
Wedding. Well, first of all, I don't know how old you are, but I am outside of the Game of Thrones target demographic.
So am I, by quite a bit.
It is true. If you you walk onto a college campus, or even to some cases down a high school hallway, and simply say Game of Thrones to somebody between the ages of about 17 and 25, they'll take a bullet for you. You will have a friend for life. Simply have to say the title. This is the one show that really seems to have gripped that very elusive population that is now watching TV in all kinds of different ways, and they're really hard to pin down. But Game of Thrones, and I think the very thing that you maybe are turned off by, its over-the-top nature, is one of the things that it does so well. That Red Wedding episode, that there were people that I think passed out when watched that, just did the kind of things. Sometimes you want television to just be outrageous in the how far it takes certain things. And that can be done well, and it can be done poorly. And I think Game of Thrones does it well. And by the way, it can be done poorly well. The Sharknado that everybody's talking about, from all traditional aesthetic standpoints, that is a really, really bad movie. It's terrible acting.
Yeah, but it's so
terrible.
Bad that it becomes
so
campy
fun.
Great, right.
That's
everybody's
right.
Talking about it.
You can have masterpiece stupidity, and I think we've got to realize that. And if that's the case, maybe it's not stupidity.
You know, by the way, I want to say one thing in case my kid is listening. There's nothing wrong with a couple of good beheadings on a television show. Like, you know, one last thing in terms of big nominations, SNL, Saturday Night Live, they're about to go into another one of those troughs, I assume. I mean, for those of us who have been fans for decades, every once in a while they have these huge, hugely talented people like Kristen Wiig and Bill Hader. Wiig obviously left the show and Hader is about to leave the show. So does Lorne Michaels, who apparently is the genius of all geniuses, how does he manage these troughs? It seems to me not terribly well.
Well, that's true. I mean, and let's face it, it is amazing. You're right. This thing got 15 nominations, which is, I think, about like fourth place, the number of nominations. And this show has been on since before I was shaving. literally, this has been on for a long time. I started watching Saturday Night Live in, I think, junior year of high school, something like that. And it has gone through some troughs. And if you go back and watch clips of some of those troughs, they are absolutely painful. But this is not science. It's show business. And you never can tell. Who'd heard of Kristen Wiig and Bill Hader? And I agree.
That's
true.
Really
exactly.
Made this. And it all depends on who they manage to get in there. And most likely, the next great cast of Saturday Night Live will probably consist of people that none of us have ever heard of.
And this is another show. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I know my own children. They've been big into Saturday Night Live through high school, through college, through their early 20s.
But that's a multi-generational audience, yeah. My sense is. I mean, kids are watching and 60-somethings are watching. Are they not?
Yeah. Yes. And that's interesting you point that out, because it is multi-generational, and it's very cleverly so. I am completely convinced, and stand-up comics have pointed this out as well, so it's not my original idea. But there's almost a sense in which if you watch Saturday night at tune it in at 11:30, 10:30 Central, and start watching, in the beginning, it's appealing across the board. You're right. People in their 60s and 50s and whatever, it's doing whatever's in the headlines. And the later it gets, I'm convinced they are still making that show with the idea that the older people are nodding off and going to sleep. And by the last 15 minutes of that show, it is a Salvador Dali-esque hallucinogenic, I don't know what.
Nothing wrong. We're talking to Bob Thompson from Syracuse. You know, Bob, in one of these interviews, when you talk to an expert like you and you're lay people like us, you have to do the mandatory question, which is, and hopefully we'll deal with it quickly, who got screwed? Which are the shows, who are the actors or actresses who didn't make the cut, who clearly should have?
You know, I suppose I should give you some answer of somebody I really liked that didn't get nominated. But these are the Emmy Awards. If this were something that was claiming to be making a list of the greatest performances and the greatest shows by some scientific, objective way, then we could say, okay, your method is off. All these Emmys say is what the voting members, people of the industry, wanted to reward. It doesn't even say what they think is best, because I think a lot of people nominate things that they think they should nominate as opposed to what they really deep down enjoyed the most. So the Emmys are useful in that they give us a guide of what the industry itself thinks about what it's doing. And that's all it means. So therefore, the idea of who didn't get what they deserved or who was left out, and people who blog about how this is a travesty and all the rest of it, it would be the equivalent if I asked you what your favorite color was, and you said blue, and I said you're crazy. You've left out purple. Yeah, that's totally wrong. I mean, blue's your favorite color. That's enough said.
Okay, let's talk about a couple of the controversies, if we can. Aaron Sorkin's show, Newsroom, it didn't make the cut, but the star, Jeff Daniels, did. Here's a little bit of Newsroom.
I'm a registered Republican. I only seem liberal because I believe that hurricanes are caused by high barometric pressure and not gay marriage.
You're spinning out of control. You're terrified you're going to lose your audience. You're one pitch meeting away from doing the news in 3D.
You're enabling an ass.
You ever notice men only ever do stupid things for one reason?
We do stupid things for a lot of reasons.
You've got a crush on this girl.
You told me to. No, I don't.
We're jumping and sinking a ship.
You had a plan!
We're going to do a good news show and make it popular at the same time.
What could possibly go wrong?
Good evening, I'm Will McAvoy.
Can you move your BlackBerry?
You know, I'm almost embarrassed to say this, so I'm going to be very careful. So I am the only adult of my age with my political leanings who never watched West Wing. So this is my first major dose of Aaron Sorkin. Well, I think Jeff Daniels is brilliant in the Will McAvoy role as the anchor of the show. I think it is the most overwritten, obvious, non-real dialogue I have ever heard on a major drama/comedy kind of thing. Do you agree with me?
No, I don't. However, a lot of smart people and smart critics do agree with you. So you're in good company with what.
Why don't you agree with me? Everything is so it's not, over-scripted and non... Go ahead, Bob Thompson.
Well, Bob Thompson, you don't realize that Jim is an anchorman in his other job, and it could be that the drama that he sees in his own newsroom involving him, is there a little conflict with Jeff Daniels going on here?
Okay, so disabuse me of this.
That said, okay, so we've given full disclosure about his biases. I'll give full disclosure of mine. Aaron Sorkin is one of our proud alumni of Syracuse University.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Maybe I'm coming from a biased perspective as well. But first of all, I will give you everything you've just claimed. I think this overwritten is a perfectly fine description of this, overwrought, not realistic. But then I think of, Richard III, overwritten, overwrought, completely not realistic. What happens in that play is not how what happened in that that monarchy. And the other thing, and usually the most what Sorkin gets what people complain most about with him is that it's so preachy, and it's
yes.
that too. So I'll agree with all of that kind of thing, but I have to say, every now if preachy is done well, I am a real sucker for preachy. And what Sorkin managed in The West Wing, which I thought was completely impossible, is he managed to talk, or have his characters talk, I should say, with a certain sense of vision and optimism about the U.S. federal government in the era after Vietnam, Monica Lewinsky, Watergate. And that is really hard to do. And the only way you can do it is just to do it absolutely shamelessly. And there are times, I have to say, when I'm watching Newsroom, and I really, really like that show, but I roll my eyes as well. But I roll my eyes like I roll my eyes when I eat a piece of rich chocolate cake.
I want to ask about a show that I'm really into.
Sure.
Lena Dunham on Girls, the show about the four girls in Brooklyn. You know what I love about her?
Best actress, by the way.
Yeah, she got nominated for Best Actress, and Girls got nominated for Best Comedy. It's because, I don't know if you saw this, but she's a little chunky, this young woman.
She doesn't look like your standard eating lady, right?
And this is a show that is aimed, I think, at young women or maybe just young people in general. But it was so great for me to see this young woman playing ping pong in only her underpants with not a great body. I thought that was a wonderful thing. You never see women who are chubby in any kind of romantic or leading role. Do you?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it tends to be you either see the cast of Friends where these people look like they just came out of a beauty eugenics
yes.
experiment, or you see shows like Mike and Molly, which are so self-consciously about different body types and all that kind of thing. Whereas this is Lena Dunham. I mean, now she's spectacularly famous, but otherwise, before she became that, she looked like someone you could see in the grocery store or that could be your friend. She, of course, is so deeply, she stars in it, she creates it and all the rest of it. So many young women now, their dream is to become Lena Dunham. They want to have their own show and do all of this kind of thing. So I think what you say is true. I have to say, once again, another show that's way outside my demographic target. I got back when it was first about to come out, HBO sent the first four episodes, and I played them to a number of my students, and it made me really uncomfortable watching that show with a bunch of students. It really made me squirrely. And then one of the women in the audience, she's probably about, I don't know, 20, 21, and she said, "This is so spot on. I have had these conversations in the last 24 hours with three of my friends. This is exactly what life is like for a young woman in America in the 21st century." And I almost wept because I was not aware that all that was going on.
Well, exactly. As a parent, you do feel this sort of depressing what you see.
Right. Yeah. I find that very, very hard to
watch. But I think it is accurate. I agree with you.
Hey, one last controversy here, which I don't get, and we're a little short on time, Bob Thompson. A lot of people are upset that Mad Men was nominated for Best Drama again. They thought it was one of its weaker seasons. I thought the season was spectacular. I hope you don't disagree with me again. I thought the final episode with the monologue about the truth about his life by Don Draper, obviously John Hamm, was brilliant. Are you part of those who think it didn't deserve that recognition?
No, here I agree with you entirely. I would not only say it wasn't the weakest season, I would almost be willing to go out on a limb and say it was its best season. And that's saying a lot because Mad Men has had a lot of
great
good seasons.
Okay, so here's Neil Patrick Harris. You know, when he first did the Tonys, I'm saying Doogie Howser.
He was doing great.
He's brilliant in the Tonys. He's
Man,
doing his,
you are old, aren't you?
He's doing his second. I really am old. He's doing his second Emmys. He is becoming America's host. He is, right?
Yes, he's so good at it.
He is
He was terrific.
It's almost, you look at him and you think, here is a guy that was born to host the Emmys.
Yeah, no, really true.
He can sing. I mean, he's a... I think Doogie might be becoming to the Emmys what Billy Crystal was to the Oscars.
Yeah, well, he was fantastic. I couldn't believe he could do all those things. I just knew him, you know, Doogie Howser, and all of a sudden there's Doogie singing.
Who'd
and
have thought?
And
I
Who'd
agree.
Have thought? Yeah. Exactly.
You know, I was when you were talking about age, I thought when you were going to say he's becoming what, and I thought the end of the sentence was going to be what Johnny Carson became to the Oscars, but apparently you're not that old. Bob Thompson, thank you so much. As always, you were terrific.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Bob is the director of the Blyer Center for Television and Popular Culture at the Newhouse School of Public Communications at Syracuse University. Coming up next, we're going to be joined by Emily Rooney. We are every Friday at 1 o'clock. She has a fantastic list of, not complaints, but observations or whatever. She's going to rant and rave is what Emily Rooney is going to do. We're also going to talk about Rolling Stone, the new pictures of Sarnaev in Boston Magazine, and a little bit about the Rakes trial. That's the Whitey Bulger trial. That's all coming up next, WGBH.
Adam Grant has burst onto the scene with some surprising findings about who ends up succeeding in their careers.
If you want to be a helpful, giving person, you don't have to be Mother Teresa or Gandhi. All you have to do is look for ways of adding a lot of value to other people's lives that cost you only a little.
Giving, taking, and how new research may change how we view the path to the top. I'm Kara Miller. That's on Innovation Hub, Saturday morning at 10 here on 89.7 WGBH.
Funding for our programs comes from you and Subaru of New England, introducing the all-new redesigned Subaru Forester with all-wheel drive. Love, it's what makes a Subaru. More information available online at SubaruofNewEngland.com. And Circus Smirkus, New England's award-winning youth circus, brings its 26th annual Big Top Tour to Massachusetts with stars aged 11 to 18. This year's show is Oz Incorporated in Waltham, July 26th to 28th. Tickets at smirkus.org.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. She's Marge Regan. This woman joins us every Friday on Open Mic. She is the host of Greater Boston, which morphs into Beat the Press on Friday nights. She is Emily Rooney. Hello, Emily.
Hey, Jim and Marjorie. How are you?
Hey, great. Emily. We're great. So, Emily, a lot of Boston, if not a lot of the country, is still outraged about the Rolling Stone cover picture of the alleged bomber, Sarnaev. You know, and now, in like retaliation, this furious Massachusetts State Police Sergeant has released a Boston magazine pictures of Sarnaev the night he was arrested in Watertown. And one of them, of course, shows him coming out of the boat where he was hiding, really bloody, with a sniper's laser light trained on his head. So what's your take, both on the Boston Magazine stuff and then the Rolling Stone cover as well? Well,
first of all, what a great get for Boston Magazine.
I know. Huge get.
And I think one of the reasons was that Boston Magazine did that really classy cover in May with the sneakers in the form of a heart.
You know, yes.
In tribute to the, the memorial at Copley Square and to all the victims and everything. So I think that was one of the reasons why that law enforcement guy gave it to them. I mean, who could have predicted this? There's all this backlash, which I thought had kind of calmed down, because the more people read the article, the more they kind of got the juxtaposition
yeah.
between the photograph and, you know, this kid who grew up like almost any other normal American kid and then ended up doing this. And I thought she had a lot of detail I was not familiar with. Some people, we knew all
too.
That. I didn't know any of that. I didn't know he cried for 2 days.
Neither
I didn't know
did
about
I.
his experiences at Ringe. I just didn't
we
know
We didn't
that.
Know
so
about the discussion about 9/11,
no?
The sympathetic
yeah.
discussion about 9/11
that,
he had with his friend.
All of that was
yeah.
good.
Or that the mother thought the son, the friend thought the son might have had mental illness problems, Tamerlan, the older son.
So I thought that the kind of venom directed at Rolling Stone had kind of tamped down a bit, but not according to people in law enforcement were having none of it. So this guy releasing those photographs, to by the way, at risk of in jeopardy of losing his job because people are saying, we're going to investigate this. They've already put him on administrative leave for a day while they investigate it. But he could lose his job for doing this.
Yeah, but he's a hero. I mean, I haven't seen any polls, but he is seen as, you know, I have to say, the more I think about this and the more I am stunned that it continues, just for myself, as the saying goes, I felt no more sympathetic to Tsarnaev when I saw Rolling Stone, and I feel no more angry about what happened on April 15th after I saw the photographs in the backyard. This notion that the photograph is going to change everything is just, since I meant to tell you this, Marjorie, I didn't say this. I got a bunch of emails out at NECN this morning because I opened last night talking about how Rolling Stone did a service because they also had a story in that issue about a dramatically important case around Stand Your Ground in Florida that will rear its head. But I got emails which I have not seen since we had on our old station when you used to criticize Sarah Palin saying, I'm never listening to your show again. I got emails this morning from people who I know are regular emailers saying, I'm never watching your show again.
Because
I said that I thought that what Rolling Stone, I understood
I did
the concern, but I thought what Rolling Stone did, particularly when you read the 11,000 word piece, was appropriate.
Well, Marjorie in our morning editorial meetings were really the only three in that room who had that reaction, that we weren't that outraged by it. I understood it.
Well, you know what,
unless somebody had pointed it out to me that it was controversial, it would have gone right past me.
The implication from the critics is if you have the position the three of us have, then you don't care about what happened on April 15th. You don't care about the killings. You don't care about the whatever. Let's move on to this Rakes thing. You interviewed him a couple of weeks ago, did you not?
I did. I had Stephen Rakes on about 4 weeks ago. He had been reluctant to speak to me. I had done a documentary more than 10 years ago. I had spoken to his ex-wife, Julie Dahmers, who had told me this story about how they were shaken down for their liquor store, and Whitey and Weeks and Flemmy handed them a bag of money, took their liquor store away, and that was it. But Stephen Rakes was really anxious to confront Whitey Bulger in court, and he was anxious to be on the witness list. He was going to stare him down. One of the questions I asked Stephen Rakes was, do you think that Whitey Bulger will ever admit to any of the murders? And here's what he said.
I don't think he'll admit to any of them. I think he's a coward. If we knew then what we know now, that he was a federal informant, we would never have been afraid of him. But when they're killing so many people, you have to be afraid. Mm. And you ask the police to help you, and they don't. Who do they help? They protect the criminals more than they do the people that were injured in over the last 30 years. It's sinful.
That is haunting sound, I should say. And I assume people know the facts now. Law enforcement sources are saying background that this death is suspicious. He had no wallet. Why was he in Lincoln? He may have died elsewhere and the body dumped where it was dumped. I mean, the more I don't know what's happened since we've been on the air for the last hour and 12 minutes, but it's not ridiculous to think that Bulger or Weeks or one of these characters may have had something to do with the death of Stephen Rakes.
Although here is a guy who was told on Tuesday that he was not going to get to testify. He was extremely disappointed, according to Stephen Davis, who's the brother of Deborah Davis, who was also murdered by Bulger and Flemmy. He was extremely disappointed, but the ex-wife, Julie, said he was not suicidal. That would be ridiculous. He was disappointed. There's a big difference between disappointed and suicidal.
Well, by the way, we should say one of the reasons why his disappointment was even higher than it was when you interviewed him a few weeks ago was because not only did he want to testify and confront, as you said, Bulger, but Weeks had testified, Kevin Weeks, a week or so ago, that the story was not that at all, that the extortion was not the Bulger group of Rakes, but Rakes trying to shake down the Bulger group to get more money and more money to give up the liquor store. So you can imagine the guys wanted to testify anyway, and now he believes that they are lying about this unbelievable moment in my life, and there it goes. But again, there's no evidence of suicide despite an initial report, I think, on ABC or something.
It certainly adds a level of intrigue. All of the networks were doing this story last night. Here you've got this unbelievable trial going on. Today, they're going through 6, 7, 8 names people, frankly, hadn't heard of that the two of these guys murdered. And then all of a sudden, one of the key witnesses drops dead in the middle of it.
What was your first thought when you heard it yesterday?
You know exactly what I thought.
Yeah, that's exactly. Well, okay,
suspected foul play, Emily. Is that what you're saying?
I was also thinking, oh my gosh, can you believe this as a layer to a news story? I hate to say it.
Yeah.
But just adding all this intrigue.
Also, if you're another victim of the Bulger gang and you testify, this guy didn't even get to testify in this trial. You got to be shaken in your boots today until there's some resolution of this Riggs death.
But just one last thing. How could it not be suspicious if they suspect the body was moved?
Exactly.
I mean, if you die of a heart attack or you die, you, there's some other, you don't move yourself, certainly. And,
that's a good point, Marjorie.
Who moves you?
I wonder if Flemmy's has ever been targeted. Apparently, I got some good info on him yesterday that he's in a place in Osterville, and they have a wing that's called the Rat Wing. And Flemmy is in the Rat Wing.
Are there other rats in the Rat Wing?
Other rats in the Rat Wing because it's a federal prison, and they have to separate these guys from the general prison population because they would all be killed.
And by the way, GBH's Adam Riley was in the courthouse, in the Moakley courthouse today for the continuation of the Flemmy testimony. He's going to join us in about 10 minutes. Can we return, Emily, to a subject that all of us discuss almost all the time, the behavior of the FBI? I almost have to take a deep breath here. I assume people heard the other day that Todashev, who is the man that was killed by the FBI agent in Florida a month or so ago, who allegedly was about to sign a confession that he and the older Tsarnaev were responsible for the unsolved triple murder in Waltham on the 10th of her anniversary of 9/11. The only thing we ever heard about the autopsy is the father got photographs, alleged photographs from the autopsy, showing that there were 7 bullets in this guy, one apparently in the back or the top of his head, which raised concerns. The autopsy was finished by the coroner in Florida, and the FBI orders the coroner not to release the results of the autopsy. What do you draw from that?
If I were that coroner, I would do what Sean Murphy, the state police photographer,
did.
Release it. Just release it. What are they going to do, put you in jail? Release it. Just let it go because this is not going to jeopardize their case. They screwed up, and that's why they don't want this thing released. And everybody knows that.
Well, not everybody. Let me just say the fact that there is such little rage about all of this because the relevance of this is not just because we're all crime fighters, is because the more you learn, the more some of us conclude that it's not impossible to believe that April 15th could have been avoided had the Waltham murders been solved and those sorts of things. On almost the same day that the autopsy, the coroner's ordered in Florida not to release the results of the autopsy, there's a congressional hearing where Republicans and Democrats have asked for the FBI to report and testify on what they knew about both Tsarnaev brothers prior to the marathon. The FBI refuses to comply with the congressional request.
Do you think President Obama knows? If you were the president, would you say, all right, I want to know what's in that FBI report? Do you think he knows?
He probably isn't as obsessed with it as we are.
No.
That would be my guess. But, it is awful. And you mentioned the congressional hearings, right?
Yeah, I just did.
Yeah. I mean, on top of this thing, on top of what's going on in the courtroom right now, on top of what Rakes just said about, going back when their family tried to get in touch with law enforcement, his wife had someone that was a cop and they go to John Connolly, the FBI. So back during the whole Whitey Bulger heyday, the FBI was misbehaving. Now we still have the FBI misbehaving in Florida, and for my money, the FBI misbehaving.
So why
in
is
Washington.
There such little government curiosity? I don't mean law enforcement curiosity. Why are executives in government not more? I broached this with Deval Patrick on my TV show the other night. He had said in our studio the Saturday after the marathon, we said, "Do you think there's any way this could have been prevented?" No. We asked him a couple of weeks ago. Do you think it was I don't know, but it's possible. I asked him the other night. And he said, based upon what I know now, the answer is no, I don't think it could have been.
Really?
How can people not be – and even, again, he's entitled to his opinion. He's the governor. How can the public not be concerned, as Marjorie says, particularly against the backdrop of the Bulger trial and history, about the FBI essentially stonewalling this investigation where they're saying this is the information. And, for those who don't know, we don't know if the guy was armed, if the guy had a knife, if the guy had a pole and charged the FBI agent.
Yeah, it has multiple times.
This is driving me out of my mind.
And where was the story being told by – who was telling the story? The different law enforcement people that were in the room with him. First he had one thing, then he didn't have something else, then he was tipping over a table, then he might have been armed. I mean, they've told a million different stories here. People don't get upset about this.
No, that's because people like Jim Browdy, who's a big government guy, always embracing all these programs and all the idealism of the government – he is the guy who's making, it's just good for you. The government is just protecting you. They know what they're doing.
So
don't
you
worry
think
about
if, in light of that position, if I call for a release of the autopsy,
yes,
then they'll probably do
exactly.
it. In any case, enough of that. It's what you wait for every week. It's what we wait for every week. Here it is, Emily's List.
incomprehensible.
It's out of control.
But how about common sense?
Doesn't matter.
Why not?
This is the kind of thing that drives people crazy.
It's your right.
Doesn't matter. I have absolutely no interest.
My favorite part, by the way, is when you twice spit out, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Emily Rooney, what do you have for us?
I don't even know what I was talking about. All right.
By the way, we don't see these or hear these in advance, just so people know.
It's kept in a hermetically sealed manager
under Funk and Wagnalls porch. All right. I got a couple of Boston-centric things here. I go to pay my real estate taxes online the other day, and they've completely changed the website. You know, they're getting with the times. I could not for the life of me figure yet out how to do it. So I email their IT support. They get back to me. I thought, this is great. They showed me exactly what to do. I go back and do it again. I'm about to hit send when I say, wait a second. The amount I'm about to send is $300 more than I owe. Why would I do that? So I go back and I go out and I said, if you use a credit card, it is a 3% surcharge, not a fee. Of 3%. I know.
Marjorie's mouth is wide open for those who are not watching us on television.
Why would you discourage people from using a credit card? So in other words, then you have to go back and give them your bank account number, your routing number. People don't like giving that stuff out because that's very personal. But a credit card, you know, give them a credit card. You can always cancel a credit card. 3%.
Outrageous.
So did you fight City Hall?
I didn't pay that. I went back and gave them my routing number. I'm not going to give them an extra $300.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Don't they want you to use the online?
So I went back to the IT guy and I asked that question, and then they didn't get back to me. All right, so that's one Boston
thing.
That's
great.
We're with you on that one. This is a rare moment.
Here's another one. You're with me. Thank goodness the Boston School Superintendent's Office has come to their senses about these BMI notices, body mass index. Mind your own business.
No.
You know, what are you going to do? And by the way, your daughter has acne. No, it's not their business.
It is their business. Let me tell you when it becomes their business, Emily, is we're now the second fattest nation on the planet. Mexico passed this a couple of weeks
ago. What
happened
to Qatar?
We have
to the bottom of that.
Qatar
is small. They
were.
Everybody.
Okay, so wait a second. We have as a former fat kid myself, so I can relate to this, we have the fattest children. And by the way, a fat child becomes a fat adult. There are a lot of, almost more often than not, the reality is if parents are the first, what's the word I'm looking for? The first, not
you think
responders.
They don't know?
Well, obviously, if they do know, they're not
so
doing anything about it, are they?
And what is a BMI notice going to do?
It's a scared straight kind of thing.
No,
if you compare the kid's BMI, body mass index, to what a normal one is, maybe it's going to scare that parent
like
straight.
I'm
with Emily.
Thank goodness
once
they've
again,
come to their senses.
Haven't you noticed oftentimes, and this is sad, really, that the children that are really, really overweight and their parents are really, really overweight, so there may be an eating pattern in the household that mom
Marjorie,
is not ready
say
to
something
change.
Here. What's your? We have a tie.
She agrees with
break the
me.
Tie?
I'm with Emily.
Yeah,
thank
I'm
you. Forget
always
don't,
goodbye
actually,
with
don't
Emily.
Voice your
all right,
opinion.
One more Boston-centric thing. Would either one of you have the nerve to jump into the Charles River?
No,
that it's me either.
No.
I was down there the other day. I was looking into it. I thought it's still orange and brown and murky, and the sediment has apparently got all these dangerous
can't
chemicals.
It.
You can't
yeah.
touch this. Like. No.
You better be
I'm glad
good.
That it's cleaned
way,
up and it's
Edgar Herwick, Herwick III, who did well allegedly he did jump in.
Oh,
he was with us on the
tape.
Radio and then he was
on
your show, which was brilliant. I didn't want
to
say this to him this morning. He sits next to me in the newsroom.
Yeah.
It appears that he has a second head like growth on his left shoulder. I didn't want to upset
all
him
right.
and I figured
good
no really
him.
If you look
it
closely,
great.
It's like a little
right.
Edgar head
right.
coming
now,
out of his left shoulder there.
This has an audio component which
myself.
They're about to play for us. But
oh, wait
I am gonna tell you right
Emily's
now.
Emily's list has an audio
it does. Because I'm gonna start this by saying it's not that I've never been duped or fooled. The governor has gotten me several times, by the way. This could not happen to me.
We have new information now also on the plane crash. KTVU has just learned the names of the four pilots who were on board the flight. They are Captain Sum Ting Wong, Wee Tu Lo, Ho Li Fook, and Bang Ding Ao.
Bang Ding Ao. Something wrong. What is it? All you
I
had to
know.
Do is read those out
see
loud
Anchorman?
Once.
Did you ever see Anchorman?
I never did see that.
You have not seen Anchorman?
No. Oh, you'd love it.
Anchorman,
I've seen broadcast news.
One of the great things. Anchorman. Is Will Ferrell? Who's
yes,
Anchorman? Yeah.
He's Anchorman.
At the end of this, he's dumber than a post, sort of
yeah,
like
as,
this woman.
Yeah.
And at the end of one of the shows, they type it. They say he'll read anything in the teleprompter. And the final thing they write into the teleprompter is F.U. San Diego. So the final thing he says is he says the full word, F.U. San Diego. And then he turns to his co-anchor and says, pretty good show, wasn't it? But fact that the woman read one and it didn't occur to her is just – how do you ever
And then by the time
he
got to
this?
The third one, that's really
okay,
unbelievable.
I have bad
All
news
right.
for you, Emily.
I got one more.
One more quick one, yeah, because
right.
we have Adam on the phone.
Actually,
the Boston Globe kind of jumped this on me today, but this Jenny McCarthy on The View, she is a certified nutcase.
Say who she is because of the vaccine deal.
She is the one who, she's an actress of some sort, but she is the one who believes that vaccines give you autism. Vaccines
do
not give you autism.
By the way, she was a Playboy model before she was one of the things.
It's been definitively proved that is not the cause of autism. And yet here they give her this platform, and I'm sure they'll get into it, and give her a false equivalency in terms of her opinion because that's what she believes.
Well, you know, I'm a big fan of I assume you know Barbara Wolvers.
Of course, I do know her.
Oh, you also did an interview. I know. Is she still in charge of the show or she's not in charge of the show?
Because I have great respect for her. She had something to do with the hiring.
Well, so how do you make – there's so many – smart, she's youngish, attractive women. But there are other controversial young women
I agree. I think it's outrageous.
It is outrageous. We agree on that as well, not the BMI.
I have a great one for next week. I'll save it.
Okay.
Look at her. Look at the look of satisfaction. We're going to take a very brief break. We're going to be joined by Adam Reilly, who was in the courtroom during the Stephen Fleming testimony today. Don't go away. Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I am Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan. Emily Rooney is sticking around. We're joined on the phone by our colleague, Adam Reilly, who is at the Moakley Courthouse, where Stephen Fleming is testifying. Good afternoon, Adam.
Hey, guys. How goes it?
Great.
Hey, Adam. We're very glad you're here. We know that Stephen the Rifleman Fleming was on the stand today telling people that they did kill people because when you're in, you're in. I love that tweet from you, Adam Reilly.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So what's the highlights?
Well, the highlight, although it seems like a grotesquely inappropriate word, but the highlight came at the end when he described the killing of his girlfriend, Deborah Davis, by, according to Fleming, by Whitey Bulger. Whitey Bulger disputes that. He insists he did not kill Deborah Davis. But Fleming described how Davis had grown frustrated with him ducking out to late night surreptitious meetings with Whitey Bulger and John Connolly. Also described how Bulger had become concerned because Fleming was lavishing material gifts on Davis, his girlfriend, buying her a Mercedes, sending her to Mexico on vacations, giving her jewelry, giving her money, engaging in really conspicuous consumption with her. And that made Bulger nervous because he was afraid it would draw attention to the Winter Hill gang. So at one point, Fleming and Davis were together at a birthday party, Fleming said today. And Fleming got a call from Bulger, a summons to a meeting with John Connolly. And Davis became upset because she was tired of him having to run out all the time. And Fleming said that at that moment, he, as he put it, blurted out the nature of their relationship with Connolly, telling Deborah Davis that Connolly was, their source inside the FBI, that they were his source outside the FBI in the criminal underworld. And after that, when Connolly learned that Davis had given up this information, and when Bulger learned that Davis had given up this information, Bulger became convinced that she needed to be killed. Fleming said that initially he didn't want to do it, but basically Bulger talked him into it, convinced him that, John Connolly had been a valuable asset to them, that they couldn't have that connection compromised. And so Fleming recounted helping lure Davis to this home in South Boston, at which he says Bulger strangled her. His description, he talked about, there was a little glimmer of emotion where he talked about how, Davis's death continues to haunt him and will haunt him to the day he dies. And I think a lot of us sort of sat up because he'd been very laconic in his delivery throughout. And then there was, again, a little hint of genuine contrition. But there wasn't a ton, and it didn't last for long. Mm-hmm. And it described her being strangled, Bulger going lying down, then later, taking Davis's body to dispose of it in a grave, which Fleming had to help dig while Bulger watched. He really wasn't very emotional at all. So there was a hint of it, and then it went away very quickly.
Hey,
I guess I would call it a highlight, although, again, it seems like an inappropriate term.
Adam, I'm curious, it's Emily, whether there was any discussion at all inside the courtroom or any scuttlebutt at all that you could determine about the death of Stephen Rakes, one of the people who was supposed to testify. Was there any speculation? Could you sense that there was any buzzing about it? Anything at all?
There was a ton. ton of buzz yesterday. Yesterday, it was almost like that had become the big story of the day, even more than Fleming's testimony. But today, the media people who I talked to, and you know, you inevitably end up having a bunch of conversations with your colleagues in the press when you're covering one of these things. It wasn't on people's minds today the way it was yesterday. Maybe just because, you know, it's been a day since it broke, and even though we still don't know exactly what happened, there's been some time for it to settle in. One point I should make to all of you is that yesterday, obviously, Fleming's testimony, he was only on the stand for about 15 minutes when court wrapped up, and it ended with these verbal fireworks where he dropped a profanity at Bulger. Bulger seemed to reciprocate. It's not entirely clear who started that exchange. But I think all of us who were here today were looking for maybe a repeat of that. And it was really amazing the extent to which the tension that we saw between Fleming and Bulger yesterday didn't manifest itself today. Through much of Fleming's testimony, when I was in the courtroom, I split the day between the media room and the courtroom. I was in the courtroom for the second half. For much of Fleming's testimony, including his discussion of the killing of Deborah Davis, which Bulger so vehemently objects to being identified as the killer in, Bulger actually almost looked like he was falling asleep. He was kind of leaned over the desk, didn't seem to be making eye contact with Fleming at all. And Fleming, for his part, seemed sort of tired and worn out for much of the day, seemed less filled with energy and testiness than he did yesterday. It looked on a few occasions like he was trying to catch Bulger's glance, or at least to look in Bulger's direction so that he couldn't be accused of averting his own gaze. But Bulger wasn't going for it, and after a while, Fleming sort of gave up. It was almost like the exchange that we saw yesterday had tired the two of them out because they are getting up in years. So very different feel than yesterday.
Adam, we only have a minute left. Two things. Yeah. One is Fleming's direct testimony concluded, and two, after Fleming, what's left in the prosecution's case?
Wait, I'm sorry, Jim. Run the first question by me one more time.
First question was, is the prosecution done with Fleming? What's the status of Fleming's testimony?
I don't believe they've wrapped up yet, although at the end of today's proceedings, Judge Denise Casper did say that that the government may be resting its case overall in this case soon, and she reminded jurors that the defense is not obligated to present a defense. As far as I can tell, you know, they closed with what's probably the most dramatic part of his testimony, but I don't think he's entirely done. And then what was question number two?
Question number two was who is left after Fleming, if anybody, for the prosecution?
You know, that is one of those questions I wish you'd asked me off air, because then I could have gone and studied up. I apologize. I can't tell you off the top.
No need
of
to apologize.
But let me tell you this, in lieu of that, after his testimony ended for the day, the government argued that a bunch of the witnesses on the defense's witness list should be barred from testifying. They argued that the defense is going to try to show that Bulger wasn't an informant, but that his status as an informant is immaterial to the case, and basically that the defense will be wasting people's time if they're allowed to call these witnesses. What I found odd about that argument, and the judge hasn't ruled on it yet, but the strange thing about that argument is that the government itself actually spent a ton of time earlier in the trial working to show that Bulger was, in fact, an informant. And even in Fleming's testimony, one of the most damaging things he had to say yesterday was that Bulger and he attended hundreds of meetings with John Connolly and other FBI agents. So I don't understand how the government can try to limit the defense's ability to call those witnesses when they've been making converts of that case themselves at great length.
Adam Riley, GBH, thank you so much for your report from the Moakley Courthouse. We really appreciate it. And Emily,
thank you so much. Thank you, Marjorie. Jim, have a good weekend.
Hanging out. Have a wonderful
Emily's
weekend. We'll see you next week.
Was stupendous.
Oh, Beat the Press tonight at 7,
fantastic.
Correct?
Fantastic.
Yeah, Beat the Press tonight
what are you talking
at
about?
7. Well, we're going to be doing whether the media kind of took sides in the George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin case. And then I've got more on Rolling Stone.
Can I come on and do Jim's list? Yeah. That just occurred to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, sure.
Think about that, will you? Thank you,
okay.
Emily.
Okay, Emily, thank you very much. Emily joins us every Friday at 1 o'clock for Open Mic. Tune in Monday for Open Mic with the Reverend Eugene Rivers. Up next, it's our Friday news quiz. Manatee versus mussels. Bud Risk from the New England Aquarium faces off with Roger Berkowitz from Legal Seafoods. That's next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
A summer stroll down Newbury Street is the perfect preview for the Boston Globe WGBH Summer Arts Weekend, presented by Citizens Bank. Nearly a dozen galleries will feature hors d'oeuvres and cocktails on Wednesday night, July 24th. Stroll, nibble, and sip while you browse artwork that'll be up for viewing and bidding throughout the Summer Arts Weekend. Check out all the events happening in Boston's Copley Square, July 26th, 27th, and 28th at bostonsummerarts.com.
We love our contributors. That means you. And the Boston Speaker Series, presented by Lesley University, offering 7 evenings at Symphony Hall with a lineup of speakers that includes a prime minister, a Pulitzer Prize winner, a humorist, and even a former spy. BostonSpeakerSeries.org. And the Joan and James Vernon Cancer Center at Newton Wellesley Hospital, striving to provide patients with expert cancer care, innovative services, and treatment options. Information at nwh.org/cancer.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I am Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan, and obviously it's time for our Friday News Quiz. Here with us in Studio 3 are Bud Riss. He's the president and CEO of the New England Aquarium. It's great to meet you, Bud.
Great to be here.
I want you to know my daughter was a penguin during her volunteer time at the one of the great experiences of her life. She's a little hot in the outfit. Yeah. And Roger Berkowitz, one of my favorite people, is the president and CEO of Legal Seafoods. Hey, Roger.
Hey, Jim. How are you? Is this a fish-centric day?
Oh, really?
day. Now, very slippery guests here.
Before
both
we get
of
started,
you.
Marjorie and I were meeting this morning about this quiz, and both of us had the same question. Does a guy who sells seafood for a living ever go to the aquarium, Roger Berkowitz?
Absolutely. We did actually get in trouble. I don't know if you remember this, Bud, but we had a sign once. We put it up in front of the aquarium. It was taken down when someone discovered it. But it showed the aquarium symbol on one side. Then we took the aquarium symbol and put it on a plate and pointed the other direction.
It's better you didn't go. And the
well,
question,
you know, Jim, I look at it the other way.
What's that?
We tell our fish, you misbehave. You're going to Legal Seafood.
Well, that's a lead into my next question. Can you ever imagine going to Legal Seafood? It's one of my favorite restaurants, and ordering, like, I don't know, a grouper filet when you realize it could have been in this brand-new, huge, beautiful fish tank?
I don't know that I would order a grouper, but I go to Legal Seafood all the time, and I love seafood.
Thank you, Bud. I did have to hang up on Bud once because he did call and want to know if I was interested in buying his floaters.
Okay, very good. One last thing before we start the quiz. You know, I read that you've got new Legal Seafoods. We've all been to the great one down at the waterfront. It's spectacular.
One of the great venues
it
in
is,
Boston.
It is one of the great venues in Boston. But you get this, the bar, new Legal Seafoods Hingham, then there's Linfield, then there's South Shore Place and Downtown Crossing. How come there's no Legal Seafoods on Cape Cod?
Ooh, I
just asked him that outside.
Did you really?
Yeah. Great question.
Because there's not.
Thanks for getting me.
I set you
buddy.
Up, Roger. Yeah.
The interesting thing, you know, the Cape is fine. It has issues with the traffic and also tends to be a little bit too seasonal. I mean, you do get that huge bump in the summer, but, you know, you can be a little lean, you know, December, January,
so
February.
That's the reason. Yes. Not a year-round.
Marjorie finds that to be a totally unacceptable answer, Roger Berkowitz. So now, Bud, for you, everybody, I watched this morning on YouTube. I don't know what I typed in, but I'm sure it's easy to find. This time-lapse photography of the replacement of the old tank and this 10-month project to get this new tank with 2 times more creatures in it. Mm-hmm. Give us the quick version of what you have now.
Sure. Well, the quick version is we have that big round tank in the middle. It's almost 4 stories high. It's got 60 windows around it. Everybody's been around that ramp, I'm sure. We tore it all apart. We replaced all the windows. We made them all bigger. We completely rebuild the reef inside the tank. It's a synthetic reef. It's a copy of a Caribbean reef.
4 stories high from
four stories high. It used to have 1,000 corals in it. Now it has 3,000. And there used to be about 500 or 600 fish in there. Now there are 2,000.
What happened to the 500 or 600 fish during the transition?
They actually lived where your daughter was playing penguin at the pool.
Is that really so?
At the pool at the bottom of the tank, and the penguins went to our other facility in Quincy, where they were on vacation.
By the way, please don't disparage my daughter playing penguin. She was greeting your customers outside and answering questions.
We
love it. Thank you very much. You want to start? Who do you want to ask questions of, Marjorie Egan?
Doesn't matter. I can go. Well, why don't I start with you, Roger?
Okay.
Ready? Who is the unlikely tree hugger whom Jimmy Fallon is talking about?
Headquarters of the EPA was renamed in honor of because of his dedication to protecting the environment. Oh. Or as Al Gore put it, are you f***ing me?
The tree hugger.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
This is a tough one. But he had a close relationship with Al Gore.
Ooh.
Roger Berkowitz.
How much time do I have to give him?
Oh, it's okay.
Think Al Gore and think somebody who might get a building named after him. Who knows Al Gore? Who might that be, Roger Berkowitz?
Oh, gosh. Boy, okay. I have no idea.
We're going to go to Bosnia.
I'll give it a stab. William Ruckelshaus?
No.
Oh,
that's a good one. He was head of the EPA.
For a second there, I thought you were really smart.
Yeah.
Okay. No, that's very impressive.
You had the first name
William
right.
Jefferson Clinton.
Exactly.
You know,
remember
I
him?
I almost said that.
Well, that, Roger, that is totally a useless explanation. It's Roger Berkowitz. That is really something. Okay. Now, here's your chance, Bud, to surge into the lead, as we call it here. This is 21-year-old Elliot Sudol describing how he made waves, literally and figuratively, this week. What did he do?
I think people just kind of think I'm crazy. I mean, it seems wild running into the water and grabbing a by its tail. This particular took about 45 minutes to get in. That's when it gets really crazy, because you got to run in the surf, grab them by the tail, and drag them backwards. And they don't really like that.
Okay, he did it on Nantucket. What did Elliot Sudol do quite recently, Bud Riss?
Well, if he went and grabbed a great white shark, he'd probably not be with us to tell us that story. I don't know. Did he get a striped bass?
No, that would be wrong. This is your chance, Roger Berkowitz. Look at him. He's very excited. You know the answer?
He grabbed, as I recall, a sandbar shark.
Give him the points. Yes, Roger Berkowitz.
Come on, buddy.
Now, here's Bud.
Come on, yeah. Buddy, he says.
You might know about that. Well, maybe you both would know. But he said that after he grabbed this shark and posted all these pictures of the shark out of the water, he then put the shark back in the water.
Mm.
I mean, can a shark live? How long can a shark live outside
most
out of the water?
Animals can't live very long outside the water. You know, a lot of people do catch and release, and one of the sort of guidelines there is don't keep it out of the water any longer than it takes to take a photo.
So we're talking like a minute.
Very short time.
Very
yeah,
short
Bud,
time.
I don't want to put pressure on you, but when there's a fish question, the pressure on the head of the aquarium to get it right is pretty high. Roger Berkowitz was on my television news quiz. The first time I ever met him several years ago. The final question was this. You can see him sweating now.
Yeah, he's
as
nervous.
We speak.
He's nervous. The I final, wish people could see it.
The final question was this. The final question was, how does a chef prepare a blue lobster? And you could see that Roger was very nervous because he could see his whole career. And now he's saying all the legal seafoods are going to shut down if I get this wrong. What was the answer after about 30-second pause, Roger Berkowitz?
You don't.
Of
course. Give it to the aquarium.
There you go.
Exactly. It's only one in a million. Next question.
Oh, you
ever seen a blue lobster?
No,
they're so
that
beautiful.
You brought that up, though, I do have a great lobster question for you, because this is a dilemma all summer long.
For Roger.
Yeah. The most humane way to boil a lobster. Do you have any thoughts on that, Roger Berkowitz from Legal Seafoods?
You drop it on the ground, you step on it, and then you... No.
That is horrible.
You know, can I help you out here?
Yeah, sure.
We actually once did a study a number of years ago on, quite simply, do lobsters have feelings?
Yeah.
No.
No?
No.
So when they're hitting the top of the pan, you don't have to feel bad about that after you drop them in?
I don't know if you want to feel bad or feel good about it, but I don't
action.
Think the lobster
is that what it is when they're moving
reflex,
its
actually, and I don't know, but you know this guy, Joe Ayers, who's a neurobiologist in lobsters? He's out in a hot mess.
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy who actually sent me a white paper saying lobsters don't have any feelings. So
right.
It is reflex action.
Right.
Good.
So
I stick it in the freezer. I mean, if you're at home, don't stick it in the bathtub because that's a slow drowning because it's not. There's no salinity in the bathtub water. But if you take it and stick it in the freezer for about... I don't know, 15, 20 minutes, you dull the senses, then you'll feel less badly.
Okay,
thank you very much. And one thing, if people are interested in seeing a blue lobster, we have a new lobster tank in addition to the giant ocean tank.
And you have one in there?
And right now we have a red lobster, we have a white lobster, and we have a blue lobster.
The blue lobster is the color. You never see them like a robin's egg. They're so beautiful.
Really?
It's like a bright, it's a gorgeous color.
Like Bud's shirt?
Like Bud's shirt, which
okay.
Most people can't see, Marjorie.
No,
now,
next, I don't know what a robin's egg
next question for Roger.
Okay. Let's go. Here we go, Roger. Earlier this week, we talked to Charlie Baker. Remember him? He ran for governor.
Mm-hmm.
Here he is describing something he did in his college days at Harvard. What did he do, and why is this action in the news this week?
I swam across the...
You did not.
I did. It
Rogers gets all the easy questions.
And I was fortified. Let's put it that way.
Did you have to...
Wait,
like,
give us the whole deal here.
Push flotsam and jetsam out of
the
way?
The whole thing was completely a dare. And the one thing I'll tell you, because it's kind of it's kind of funny, I wandered down in the dark in my bare feet and my, you know, my street clothes to step into the... I actually stepped on a dead animal, which almost froze me out of doing it at all. But I did it, and it was not a pleasant experience.
I'm guessing he went in and swam across the Charles.
That is correct. Roger Berger.
That is correct.
And people know the reason we even asked him about this, the first public swim in the Charles since the 1950s was a week or so ago. Would either of you guys do this? How about you, Bud Riss?
I would do it.
You really would do it?
I keep a boat right off of Long Wharf in the harbor, and I've been known to dump right off the back of that as well.
How about you, Roger
Bird? No freaking way.
Love to
nope. Nope. Nope.
Me neither.
Nope.
I think they're all nuts. We had a guy that works for us here, Edgar B. Herwick III, who jumped in, and when you went, he looked like he was going into a big thing of iced tea.
Well, you know, it's actually a huge success story, Boston Harbor. We know because we draw a lot of water out of the harbor for our big tank, and it needs a lot less treatment than it did 40 years ago.
Well, that's good. It used to bubble, I think, 40 years ago.
A lot less treatment. That's the key statement there. Okay.
Thank you, Roger. Now, Bud, this is your question. What hotly anticipated event by at least some people is Stephen Colbert talking about right here?
When will the heir to the crown begin to crown? I mean, wait, what am I thinking? The Brits use metric, so 9 months there might be 10 kilo weeks over here. I don't know. Oh, who will have less hair? Or Prince William?
So what's he talking about?
I think we're all eagerly awaiting baby of Kate Middleton.
Yes, I am. I'm following it very closely.
Now, do you actually care about this, Bud Riss? Be honest.
Not the slightest.
Now, how about you, Roger Berkowitz?
Not really.
Not really. So
it's a gender. It's a gender.
Maybe it is a gender.
It's a gender.
And if my wife is listening, she just said, "Don't come home for dinner," because she's watching carefully.
There you go. See, it's a girl thing. I think that's absolutely true. Okay,
at the end of two rounds, it's Roger Berkowitz 2 and Bud Riss from the New England Aquarium 1. Before we continue with the contest, on a serious note here, there was this whole controversy. I don't know what the organization is, but the national group that decides what the catch limits are decided to reduce catch limits on cod, the bottom fish, if that's what they're called, by as much as 70%. I know Martha Coakley has filed a lawsuit about this, saying it's shoddy science. Where are you on this, Roger Berkowitz?
Well, I'm on Martha Coakley's side, and she has sued NOAA.
That's the organization
who oversees it, and they oversee National Marine Fisheries. And the question here is whether or not the science is accurate. And there's a number of us, including people, fishermen, and whatnot, that see it as being somewhat arbitrary science. I mean, they're using science from 1912, and they're sort of taking guesses. Whereas there is better science available, particularly with sonar, to take a better look. I don't know if there's more fish. I don't know if there's less fish, but I do know that it would be appropriate, perhaps, to get better science, and that's part of what Martha's suit's about.
Okay, fair enough. I'm not going to ask you about my daughter's a penguin.
No,
again,
I
want
to ask. May I ask a serious question?
Of course, sure.
A serious question, because it is very hot outside. And Bud Riss over here used to head up the Union of Concerned Scientists. You're all involved in the G8 climate change stuff that went on with Tony Blair, et cetera. So I read this morning that the Pilgrim nuclear power plant may have to shut down because the water that they never anticipated would be 75 degrees in Cape Cod and off Plymouth is now 75 degrees. They never anticipated this water warming. What do you think? You're Mr. You know a lot about this stuff.
Sure. It's not what I think. I think it's what I know. And if you follow the science, there's very clear pattern underway now. The oceans are, in fact, warmer. And one of the problems is if you know from, fifth grade chemistry or physics, when water warms, it expands.
Yep.
So you hear a lot of talk about sea level rise. One of the principal contributors of that is going to be the expansion of the ocean as it warms.
Okay. Isn't that one of the reasons why the lobstermen off, for example, Gloucester and those places are in so much trouble? Because the lobsters have to move to colder waters in Canada,
There's been a big debate, like the cod we were talking about a few minutes ago. There's been a big debate over the health of the lobster fishery south of Cape Cod because its volume has really shrunk quite dramatically. And a lot of the debate has been, are we overfishing it or not, or regulating it properly or not? We actually think the water's gotten warmer and the lobsters move north.
Okay, so one quick thing. How many years before Cape Cod is underwater? 20 years, 40 years, 50 years? Will I be long dead?
Sea level's going to rise between 2 and 6 feet by the end of this century.
I'll be dead by then.
Yes, you will. Roger Berkowitz, what?
That's
a good reason not to open. That is not a good reason. Next question for Roger Berkowitz, who is leading 2-1. Marjorie.
Oh, whoops. Yes. Okay, where are my questions?
Here's a montage.
A montage?
Yes.
Oh, here's the montage. I thought this newscast is from yesterday.
Next question. Here's a montage.
You better do it, Jim, because I can't find
Here's a montage, Roger Berkowitz. That is the next question, judges. Is it not? Yes, it is. Of 3 Emmy-nominated TV series, listen, Roger Berkowitz, and see if you can identify. We'll give you even 2 of the 3.
You know the business, and I know the chemistry.
You want to cook crystal meth?
I feel I've been remiss in my duties. I haven't shown you the hospitality you deserve. My king has married, and I owe my new queen a wedding gift.
Yeah, I'm just the lowly House Majority Whip.
I keep things moving in a Congress choked by pettiness and lassitude. My job is to clear the pipes and keep the sludge moving.
Now, can you name two of those three Emmy-nominated series, Roger Berkowitz?
I'm guessing Breaking Bad is
one. That is
one.
That is one.
Let's see.
Can you name one more?
That was very
apparently
impressive.
Not.
Just one was impressive.
How about it?
The other one was something. It was Thrones, something about
Well,
Thrones?
Do we give it to him, judges? We do. Yeah. Game of Thrones. And the third was House of Cards. Very impressive.
I didn't know the House
Do you
of
watch
Cards.
Television other than my show, of course, Roger?
You know, I have been watching Homeland.
Oh, and, how great
and,
is
and
Homeland?
And recently, I don't know if you've seen this, actually. I just started that. Ray Donovan.
Yeah, Ray actually, yes. Is it, what are you making a face like? You don't know about this? Tell her, Roger Berkowitz.
Ray Donovan is actually characters out of South Boston that have moved to L.A.
Oh, yes.
And there are themes that are, you know, working along what's happening at the federal trial
courthouse.
Now.
Okay, Bud Riss.
Okay, you ready, Bud?
You got it
I've got my act together now.
Go ahead.
Here's writer biographer Jack Beatty talking about his latest book subject, a man famous for verbal gaffes and garbled speech. Who's he talking about?
He doesn't mumble. If you talk to him in conversation, the man's... The first thing that strikes you is his intellect is just so powerful and his analytical abilities. He gets to the point of everything before you get there.
Easy. Mr. Thomas Menino, our good mayor.
That
Very
is exactly
good.
Right.
Very good.
So before the next round, I would like to announce that Roger Berkowitz is in the lead with 3 points, and Bud Riss, who is the head of the New England Aquarium with a great new huge fish tank, has 2 points. Now, this is a new round for you gentlemen. It's called our... Exactly. Thank you. That's not good for any of our eardrums. It's our lightning round. Now, here's the deal, gentlemen. Since you both have knowledge of marine life in common for our lightning round, we're asking you questions about Sharknado, which is the new film that apparently neither of you have seen. Good. Now, here's the... Let's hear a little bit from Sharknado.
Tornado. Sharknado. Enough said.
Now, if you missed out on Sharknado, which you did, it's the recent made-for-TV movie where a freak hurricane hits L.A., causing man-eating sharks to be scooped up in tornadoes and flooding the city with shark-infested seawater. That's happened many a time, is it not, Budriss?
Oh, every other decade.
Thank you. Now, the first question I'll ask of you, Roger Berkowitz, relating to Sharknado is this. They're multiple choice, so don't get queasy here. Who among these three celebrities hosted and tweeted the events of her Sharknado viewing party? Would it be A, Whoopi Goldberg? B, Mia Farrow, or C, Sarah Palin? Which one, Roger Berkowitz?
Oh, gosh.
Can't believe you don't know this. Whoopi Goldberg, Mia Farrow, Sarah Palin.
I'm going to say Sarah Palin.
That would be wrong. Do you want to steal the question, Bud Riss? Bud, are you with
I'll
us?
Go with Mia Farrow.
That is exactly correct, and we now have a tie game.
That's so weird.
I don't know why,
Mia
but
Farrow.
Sounds right.
Yeah. I never would have guessed that.
She was also tweeting about Rosemary's Baby in the same tweet. Okay, now ask a question of Bud Riss. It's now a tie,
okay,
gentlemen.
Bud, which among these three is a true statement? A, the producers of Sharknado are officially working on a sequel called Sharknado 2. This time, a freak tornado scoops up man-eating sharks from the Atlantic Ocean and drops this shark-infested seawater all over Manhattan. That's A. B, the producers of Sharknado are officially working on a sequel called Sharkano. This time, a freak series of volcanic eruptions spews thousands of man-eating sharks all over Maui.
That sounds great.
Or C, the producers of Sharknado are making a sequel called Shark Avenue. This time, a freak flood forces man-eating sharks into Manhattan's sewer system. Is it infests Manhattan, Maui, or Manhattan's sewer system?
So Manhattan gets 2 out of 3 out of this. I'll take C, Manhattan's sewer system.
That'd be wrong.
That is not close, but
Roger,
no
Roger, you can
cigar.
Steal it. Is it Sharknado 2 or Sharkano?
Sharknado 2.
Yes, Sharknado 2 is the correct answer. Thank you for that.
I think we need to get this on our IMAX, don't you?
I do. Imagine us. Wait, speaking of sharks, what does it do with the sharks in the big tank now? At the aquarium.
We have a number of sharks in the big tank.
Okay.
We have our black-nosed sharks and bonnethead shark, which is a relative of a hammerhead shark.
Okay. So, and those are pretty big.
They're getting big.
Yeah. Okay.
Tell them about all the sex that's taking place.
Oh, this is a funny story. But I'll simplify it in that we've replicated the natural system so well in the new tank. I think we've already had 6 reproductive events so far.
Really?
Is that true?
Yeah.
Well, look how you look like a proud father.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting
really
to watch. It's much better than Kate Middleton.
Hold on. Wait a minute. Is the reproductive event the birth or the sex?
I think you need both to have it happen all the way. So
you would know that, Margie.
I just wondered what the event was you were referring to.
Yeah.
Okay, here's question three.
He's not answering me.
Well, they're so consumed with the Sharknado questions. One more for each of you. Which amongst these three, Roger Berkowitz, is true? A, when executives pitched Sharknado to scriptwriter Thunder Levin, he thought they had said Sharknado. He wondered if he could pull off a film involving man-eating sharks in the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. B, when executives pitched Sharknado to the scriptwriter Thunder Levin, he thought they had said Sharkmato. He wondered if he could pull off a film about mutant man-eating shark tomato hybrids. Or C, when executives pitched Sharknado to scriptwriter Thunder Levin, he thought they had said Sharknado. He wondered, Snarknado, my apologies, thank you. He wondered if he could pull off a sci-fi film about snarky storm chasers. Which is it, Roger Berkowitz? And do not ask me to repeat them. Thank you.
I'm going to guess C.
That would be wrong. Bud Riss, you can plunge into a tie if you get this right. Is it A or B, please?
Do you pay your research staff to do this?
Yes, we do. We pay them very well. Sharknado
very clever.
Or Sharkmato? Which is it?
I'm going to go with Sharkmato.
That would be wrong. And here's the final question.
Can I have one more
guess? Wait, no, you may not. Now, you know how exciting this is? This is the final question, Bud, for Marjorie. If you get this right, the two of you go home in a tie. Is that spectacular?
I thought we were 3-3 now.
No, it's
we?
4. The judges never lie. It's 4 to 3, Roger.
Okay,
very competitive soul, Bud.
I'm
ready.
Thank you for the accuracy.
Okay, this is A, B, or C again. Which among these statements is true? The Wisconsin Dells Chamber of Commerce used Sharknado as an opportunity to promote the safety and serenity of their shark-free lakes. That's A. B, the Red Cross of Oklahoma City used the film as an opportunity to promote storm safety awareness and to pass out storm safety information. Or C, Greenpeace used Sharknado as an opportunity to talk about the hazards of climate change.
I'm going to go with C, Greenpeace.
Very sadly.
I would have guessed that too, but that is
wrong.
Not correct.
Roger, I would have guessed it too.
It doesn't matter whether you're right or wrong. Congratulations to Roger Berkowitz. Right. He has won a quiz. You're pretty happy about that, aren't you, Roger?
Ecstatic. Thank you.
Now, Bud Riss, before we go, give us this. What are the hours of the aquarium? What's the website? What do people need to know about this new exciting era for the aquarium?
The hours are 9 to 6, Monday to Thursday, and then till 7 o'clock on the weekends. You can go online, buy your tickets advance. We now have time ticketing, so you can pick the slot you'd like
to go
visit at your leisure.
Do you still have the polar bears there?
We've never had polar bears.
What did you have the outside? Wasn't there a polar bear outside of the aquarium?
We have a whole number of fur seals out.
There's
a new exhibit over the water that has fur seals
in it.
I didn't know.
Yeah. I thought those were
Have you noticed that a lot of people confuse fur seals and polar bears? Have you noticed that, Bud Riss?
Not too many, only the one.
Now, do you serve polar bear at Legal Seafoods, Roger Berkowitz?
We do not.
Okay, what's on the horizon for you? Marjorie quickly went through this. You're opening in a lot of places.
Some different places, different looks, different feels.
Exciting thing to me, you are opening in Downtown Crossing.
We are opening
future.
Downtown Crossing. It's going to be called LX.
I'm serious. I mean, Downtown Crossing has gone through lots of almost revitalizations and then real ones. I mean, this is obviously a pretty major thing for you to be there.
You know, I hope the timing's right. I've been looking at Downtown Crossing seriously for about 15 years, and just it's really a question of timing. It's right in the center of the city. You're right around all kinds of transportation. You know, there's theater now. There's housing there now. There's hotel. There's sort of everything there, and it's at the tipping point.
And there's parking, too.
Yes, there is.
What can you tell us about? I mean, since you have so many restaurants, and obviously I assume they're sensitive to turns in the economy. How is the economy according to Legal Seafoods?
Well, you know, in general, it's interesting because I think there's been a shift since 2007 to now. It's sort of going away from less dining, less formal eating, less white tablecloth, and more to eating, more casual eating. Mm-hmm. And the day parts are sort of shifting as opposed to, you know, it used to be more, you know, you went in at 7 o'clock, you had a formal meal. Now it's sort of the shouldering. It's sort of a little bit in the afternoon, 2 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It's a little bit 9, 10 o'clock at
really?
Night. Yes. Yeah. And it's also, you know, coming in, grabbing a cocktail or a glass of wine and a couple of appetizers. It's not the whole notion of the formal entree is starting to go away.
Yeah. The whole restaurant, I have to say, in South Boston, in the roof deck, is as beautiful a sight and a beautiful view of the city as any place I've ever been.
Thank you.
Roger Berkowitz, it's great to see you from Legal Seafoods. Bud Riss, it's an honor to meet you. I'm a big, huge fan of the aquarium. We both said before, what did you say about when we had young kids?
I spent every other weekend standing in front of that fish tank for hours and hours and hours. And I'm glad the glass is bigger now.
You'll spend even more hours now because it really is magnificent.
We've heard nothing, by the way, but spectacular things.
That's
congratulations.
Nice to hear. Thank you very
much. Gentlemen, great to see both of you. And thanks to all of you for listening to Boston Public Radio. On Monday, on Open Mic, it'll be the Reverend Eugene Rivers. We're also going to go over the history of swearing. There's a new book out by a Somerville writer. Her name is Melissa Moore. She'll join us. You can find us on the web at wgbhnews.org/BPR. Follow us on Twitter at BOS Public Radio. Me at Jim Browdy. Marjorie at Marjorie Egan. We're done. I am Jim Browdy.
And I am Marjorie Egan.
Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you Monday at noon.